שם שביז פרק יוד הלכה גימל. פרוזבול המוקדם כושר והמאוחר פסול. פרסום את פרוזבול and he dated before the date, so he did, the principle was actually written on the 10th day of El, and he wrote that it was written on the first day of El. The principle is kosher because the person who's writing it is giving himself less rights, because he's saying a principle only works to allow the person to collect loans from the day that it was written. So if he dates it to the first day of El, then he can only collect loans that had been made before the first day of El. In truth, his principle is written later. He really has rights to collect even more loans. So he's cutting back on his rights by writing this principle, and therefore the principle is kosher. This principle is accurate, that at least from the first day of El, he had principle, and therefore it's kosher. What happens if he's writing his principle on the 10th day of El, but he wrote that the date is going to be the 20th day of El, then it's possible, because he's claiming more rights than he's really entitled to. He's claiming that he can collect loans even that happened up to the 20th day of El. In fact, he only has the right to collect loans that happened until the 10th day, and therefore the principle is possible. Excuse me. Shtari Chayv HaMukdamin Pesulin. By Shtari Chayv, a document that says that someone owes you money, it's the opposite. If it's written earlier, it's possible, and the earlier it's possible because the loan is the loan. The amount of money the person owes you, that's equal, whatever the date is. But the thing is, if you have a shtar that's written that has a date in it, you can collect from the kuchas. That means you can collect if the person, if the borrower had owned a piece of land that he sold to somebody else, you can collect from that piece of land. So if you write the date earlier, if the loan had happened on the 10th day of El, and you wrote the first day of El, then any land that the person owned even on the first day of El, you can collect from. But in truth, you can only collect from land that he owned as of the 10th day of El. So by then, he might have sold some. So the din is, if it's mukdam, it's pasul, because you're claiming rights that you don't deserve. If it's written later, it's better, and it's kosher, because then you're entitling yourself to less land, because you're saying only from a date after the loan was made, and therefore you're allowed to, it's kosher. If one person borrowed money from five, then you have to write five principles, one for each of the people who lent the money. If five people borrowed from the same person, then he writes one principle. In other words, the principle is written by the lender, and the lender has to just write one, no matter how many people borrowed from him. But therefore, someone borrowed from five different people, each one of them has to write a principle for him. Next, in question principle of la carta, a person can only write principle if they have land, and in this case, we haven't seen it to mean if the borrower has land. And there's different explanations. Some say that the reason is because that then once the borrower has land, it's as if the loan is collected. So it's we had early Mishnah said if a loan is collected or it's like it's collected, then Shemitah is not Mishan. Or some say that if you have land, then that's considered a normal loan. People only lend money if someone has land. Otherwise, it's a milta l'shchicha, and principle doesn't work. So, what happens if the borrower doesn't have any land? So then the lender gives him even a tiny bit of land of his. He gives him as a present, he gives him even a tiny bit of land, and that's enough for him to be able to collect from it, either because that makes it into a regular loan, because now the person has land, technically he has land, or because there's a way to collect from a loan, even if the person has a tiny bit of land, you can end up collecting the whole loan. So therefore, you give him a tiny bit of land, that's good enough. What happens if the borrower has land, but the land is given out as a mashkin to somebody else? Because that's fine, he still considers he owns land, and you write a principle based on his owning of that piece. He says even further, if a man who has no land, but his wife owns land, and he has certain rights to that land as the husband. He has certain rights. That's good enough. And you could write a principle to the man because his wife owns land. The assignment that's up and shopping, and not only that, but even if there's a yasim, an orphan, and he has an apotropos who takes care of him, and the apotropos has land, then you could write a principle against the yasim based on the apotropos, even though the apotropos is land. Not really responsible for his loans, but it's already considered that the borrower, or the borrower's, the party of the borrower has land, and that's good enough to write a principle. Then the Mishnah says, Kaveris Devarim, if you have a beehive, Gemara is going to explain this is a specific kind of beehive that's on the ground, not attached, but it's on the ground. So the Lezer Omer, this is a special din, we'll see in the Gemara why, but there's a reason why we assume that this is like, it's considered ground. And therefore you can make the kinyanim that work on ground. The Kaisen Lev Prusbal, you could write a Prusbal on it, because the borrower is considered to own land. The Enim Kabbalah is Tumah, the Mekaimah, excuse me, it can't be Mekabal Tumah, because things that are attached to the ground, they're not Mekabal Tumah. And if someone scoops out one of the honeycombs out of it, he's chay on Shabbos. He's chay because he considered that he was kitzer. He cut some off from the ground from where it was grown. We consider it to be the ground to such an extent that it's even as if it's grown on the ground. And for cutting off that, you chay for kitzer for like harvesting on Shabbos. But chachamim are no. Any kikarka, it's not a kark. You can't make a no kark when they cut from the principle. He can't write a prosbo because it's not like the lender had the borrower has money, and there's no malacha of no malacha deraisa of kotzer because it's not attached to the ground. So there's a number of different ways that there's an argument between Rav Elazar and the Chacham as to whether this honeycomb, this hive, is considered to be attached to the ground or not. Then the Mishnah is like this: Hamachzer chay b'shvius. If a person comes to pay up his loan on Shrius, that means it's for us, that means it's after Shrius. So the person, in other words, they did not write a principle, and the borrower comes and says he wants to pay up his loan. So then the lender has to say to him, no, it's Mishan, I step back from the loan, I step back and will not recollect this loan because Shri the past. And then, if the lender says, no, I want to pay you back anyhow, even though Shri the past, you can't believe him, you should accept it from Shinema. The pasuk says this is the literal translation of the pasuk is this is the word of Shemitah. So it teaches us that there's some kind of a word about Shemitah, something you have to say about Shemitah. So that means to say that the loan is not canceled, you're not allowed to collect it. The pasuk says, you're not allowed to collect from your friend. And then there's some wording that you have to do, which is to say you're allowed to collect it, you're allowed to accept the money, but you have to say something first. And the Mishnah's understanding that means is you have to say you don't want to collect the money, and if the person insists on paying, you're allowed to accept it because the loan is still outstanding. It's very similar to this, Retzeach, Shekol, Ir Mikvah. If a murderer, someone killed someone by accident, he has to go to an Ir Mikvah to and Verachu Anche Ir Lechadeh, and the people in that city want to give him some kind of a kibbutz, they want to honor him in some way. So really, he's not exactly deserving of honor. He's here as a murderer. So Yirmel him Retzeach, and he should say, I'm Retzeach, and I don't, you shouldn't honor me. Oh, Alpha PK, what happens if they said, we want to do it anyhow? Yikav on him, then he can accept it. Shinem v'zed v'ar Retzeach. V'ar Retzeach says, this is the word of the Retzeach. The teacher says, the Retzeach has something he has to say to people. So he has to say to people, is in this kind of a case where they try to honor him, he doesn't have to turn down the honor, but he has to turn it down at first and say he doesn't want to take it. Okay, then Yerushalmi starts with this. Prusbul hamoktim kosher. A prusbul that's written from an earlier date than it was truly happened on is kosher. The nation of Mura kosher, because it makes his position weaker, as we explained in the Mishnah, because it covers fewer loans. And if he writes it for a later date, then that's possible because that's giving him more strength. It's allowing him to collect for more loans after Shemitah, and therefore it's possible. A shtar chay that's written to an earlier date is possible. Because it makes it strengthens him. It gives him more rights to collect from people who have bought land from the borrower. As we explained, if you wrote a loan document for a later date, that's fine because it makes your it's giving you less rights, and that's therefore not a problem. So, frankly, we'll go with the gears. So, Mimeda, who's going to tell Bezin that the Shtar Chayv was written too early? The Ma'afud one is written about a principle, but just so everybody else knows that it's talking about a Shtar Chayv. So the Shtar Chayv that's written early is possible. So Frank the Gemara, who's going to tell, how does he know that the Shtar Chayv was written early? So the Gemara says, Shimon Bar Kola says, B'Shem Rabbi Yochanan, Hachasim B'Shtar. The Eidim who signed on the Shtar say, we signed on the Shtar, but we signed on it on 10th of El, and really, and the Shtar would, and the Shtar says it was written on the first day of El, but it's not true. Really, we signed it on the 10th day of El. It's affecting him. Kenam or Shimon Lakish. Didn't Shlokish say also? Didn't Chazum Shtar? Can we shnech or do some bebesim? Didn't he say the people who signed on a Shtar? When you have a Shtar with signatures on it, once we prove that these signatures were written by these people, then it's as if those people had come into Besdin and said their testimony and had been cross-examined and found to be saying the truth. So it's so solid. If so, if some of the person comes in with the shtar, and we prove that, in fact, these people signed the shtar, so then, and now they're coming along saying that it was written on a different date, so it's as if their Eidim were trying to change their mind. They're not allowed to. Once Eidim come to Besdin and say their testimony, they're not allowed to come back later and say, it wasn't true what we said. There's a rule, Kim and Shehigit Shuv and Chojer Mayav, and Eidim who say Eidim are not allowed to come back and recant their testimony. So they're not believed this when they come back and change their mind. So over here also, the Shtar says it was written on the 10th day of El. The people walk in and say we wrote on the 1st day of El. So it's possible. The Eidim should not be believed. So how would anybody know that a Shtar was Muktam? The only people who could tell us that, the only people who would be trusted to tell us that would be the Eidim. And the Eidim are not going to be trusted because once they sign the Shtar, it's too late. So the Gemara says no. Bram, come on, the Gemara says, over there, the case of Reish Lakish is Kisha Amru L'chassam L'chalikar. That's took me over. They didn't come in and claim that they never signed it, that the whole, whatever's written in the Shtar is false. So we say that doesn't make sense. We don't believe you on that. We know that you signed it because we've proven that these are your signatures. We know you signed it, and now you're just trying to change your mind. We don't let you change your mind. But Hacha, Mishnah is took with Amri, Azeh Chassam L'chassam L'chassam. When the Eidim are saying, we signed this loan, we did sign it, and we knew that there was a loan happening, but we didn't pay attention to the date on the loan, and at the time we weren't noticing that the loan said for the wrong date, it didn't have any significance to us. So if they say that, that much they're allowed to be believed. They're not changing their mind. They're not saying there wasn't a loan, they're just saying the date is not right. Okay, now the ones like this. We have a shtar that was muktam, a shtar chol that was written for an earlier date. What's the din? The Mishnah had said is, it's possible. So when it says in the Mishnah that it's possible, it means that it's completely possible that shtar is, we rip it up and throw it in the garbage because it's written for the wrong date. When it says possible, it doesn't mean that it's completely possible. It means is that you can only collect on the correct date. So the loan happened on the 10th day of El. It was written that it happened on the 1st day of El. So what we do is we say is you can only collect from the Shtar for land that the person owned as of the 10th day of El. Okay, so it's possible, means it's possible as written, but it is kosher overall. Like the Gemara, Vatani, Prusbo, Bein Mukdam, Bein Mukha Kosher. There's a verse that says that a Prusbo, whether it's written an earlier date or a later, whether it's predated for when it was actually written or postdated, it's Kosher. Now, actually, that makes sense. Our Mishnah said that if it's postdated, it's possible, but it means that the Einamun, El Mishas, accept. But when it says possible, if it was postdated, it means you can only collect from the date it was written. So it was written on the 10th day of It says in the principle that it was written for the 20th day, though, it's kosher. Now, kosher doesn't mean fully kosher. The Rambam said that was possible. So it means it's kosher. You collect from the 10th day, though, at loans up to the 10th day, though, and that's it. So the Gemara asks, in my memory, Ad Kain B'Shtaris, Ma Ben Puzzle Ben Ma Ben Shtar. If you're telling me that when you write a shtar with the wrong date, it's only possible from the wrong date, but it's kosher from the correct date, so then, why did this person say that by a prusbul you have the rights to do that? Prusbul says the Rabbanon. So prusbul is more kal than a shtar chayv. If it was even true by a shtar chayv, the person should have said that even a shtar chayv that was written for the wrong date could be used for the date, for the correct date. So why did it only say that for prusbul? Why did it say prusbul has the rights to do that, implying that a shtar chayv does not? It must be that Rabbi Yochanan is right, that when a shtar chayv has the wrong date, when you write a shtar chayv, that's mukdam, the shtar chayv is completely possible. And only by prusbul is there a special kula that if it's written for the later date, we allow you to collect it from the correct date, from the true date, and not from the date that's written in the shtar. It's a kula for prusbul, it's only drachon anyhow. So we allow you to get away with that. But the it must be that by shtar chayv does not look like that, and Rabbi Yochanan is correct. Okay, so the analogy one thing is like this. Shtar shizmani kosev the Shabbos or v'servet tishrei. What happens if you have a shtar, and when you look at the dates, the people wrote a certain date on the shtar, and when you look at the calendar, you find out that day was Shabbos. Or v'servet tishrei. Or they wrote a date, they used the non-Jewish dates of the month, they were January 25th, and you looked at the calendar, and you see, well, January 25th it wouldn't be, but you find out that day is in Kippur. Okay, so the people wrote a day on a star, and it turns out that day was the 10th day of Tishrei, it was in Kippur. Obviously, they didn't write a star on that day. So what do you do with such a shtar? So obviously something is strange about, something's wrong with the shtar. So Rabbi Yehuda Machshir, Rabbi Yehuda says that the shtar is kosher, and we assume that the shtar was written the day before. So, you know, so this is a shtar that's mu'uchar. You wrote the shtar, you wrote the wrong date on it, and you wrote it in it's still kosher. I mean, it's signed, it's assumed it's kosher. So it must have been written in a way that was kosher. So you wrote it the day before, and you wrote it on Friday, or you wrote it on the 19th of Tishrei, and you just got the dates wrong, or you just finally made a mu'uchar, and Rabbi says it's kosher. Rabbi Yossi points over, Rabbi Yossi says that the shtar is possible, and the Gemara is going to explain in a second that the reason why he said, well, the Gemara is going to explain why he says it's possible. I'm going to read the Ma'asibal Fenecha B'tzipayri Hechsharta. I know a story that a shtar like this came to you when you were a dying in Tzipayri, and you said that the shtar was kosher. So how can you say to me now that the shtar is possible, when I know that you held that the shtar was kosher? Amala Anila Hechsharti, it's not true. I would have never been permitted such a shtar to be kosher. If Hechsharti, Hechsharti. But if I did do it, then the way Chaim Kanevsky learns is, if I did it, there must have been a good reason why I allowed it in that case. As a rule, I would not allow it, but if there was some good reason, then maybe that's why I wanted it. So now the one is going to explain what was behind this back and forth between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi. Have a point, Nehemiah. We originally thought, which is Rabbi Yehuda originally thought, the man the Amr Pasol, Mishum Uchar, the one who says, I'm sorry, man the Amr Pasol would change the gears at Mishum Mukhtam. He thought that the reason why Rabbi Yossi said it was Pasol is because he thought it was a shtar that was Mukhtam. And the one who says it's kosher is mu'uchar. In other words, Rabbi Yehuda understood that the reason why he says the shtar is kosher is because he assumes the date on the shtar is obviously wrong, but the shtar seems to be kosher. So what we figure out that it must be known as a shtar mukdam, a shtar mu'uchar, and the shtar is kosher. That's fine. And Rabbi Yehuda understood that Rabbi Yossi understood that the reason why it's possible is because we assume if a shtar is written on a date that couldn't have been, let's say it was Shabbos, something is really odd about the shtar, so we have to be concerned that maybe the shtar was written earlier than that. If they got one thing wrong, they wrote the wrong date, maybe they wrote the wrong date, maybe they also didn't know the din, and they wrote the shtar to be Mukhtam also. So therefore, he said to Rabbi Yossi, he said, but I saw you once did that you allowed such a shtar to go by. So when Rabbi Yossi answered his back, if I said it was kosher, there must have been a good explanation for why I said it was kosher. That's because really you misunderstood Rabbi Yossi. Elam on the Amr Pasul, the truth is that the one who says this pasul is Mishum Ziyuf. He thinks the one who says pasul says that if you have a shtar that has a date that couldn't possibly be, it says the shtar was written on Shabbos, then he's concerned that the shtar was a forgery. Not that it was written for the wrong day, but that it was a forgery. Well, then it's possible. If the concern that it was a forgery, not that it was mu'uchar, then it could well be that if he had other reasons to convince him that it was kosher. If there was reasons to believe it was true, there were other circumstances around the story that made us believe that the shtar was really a real shtar. In that case, since the whole concern is that it was forged, well, if I have reason to think that it was kosher, it was a really good shtar, then I'll say that, okay, it must have been mu'uchar. But it's possible, because I think if the reason why I don't let such a shtar is because I think it's a forgery, if I have reason to think it's not a forgery, then I'll allow it. And I'll say that there was it must have been just written for the wrong date. But if I but if the concern had been that I thought that it was possible because it was mukdam, then there's no circumstances that could have proven that. So Rabbi Yehuda, who answered the question to him, was because Rabbi Yehuda thought that Rabbi Yossi was making it possible because he thought it was mukdam. Well, mukdam, there's nothing about a story that can help you prove that something wasn't mukdam. But if the concern was because he thought that it was mizuyah, because he thought it was forged, then there could have been circumstances in a specific case that he would have allowed it because he thought that it was, there was reason it was not mizuyah. If it was not mizuyah, then he would have said, okay, it must have been mu'uchar. And the Gemara continues, in Kaishim Puzbal HaKarki, you can't rent a Puzbal unless the borrower has land. Now the Gemara says like this, Rav Amar, Fushi HaKarki Lamalva Ululeva. Both the lender and the borrower have to have money. Have to have land. Not if just the Mishnah talks about that the lender the borrower has land, but the truth is that the lender has to have land also. The Manafula says that the reason is because Rav holds that everybody says that the problem is because the lender has land. You have to be concerned that maybe he doesn't have his land anymore. Maybe he had land and you made the loan, and by now he doesn't have it. So therefore, the borrower has to also have land, so the borrower could give him a piece of his land, like the Mishnah had said. Now the Rav Fulda says, so what's wrong if just the borrower, just the lender has land? So the Rav Fulda says, well then, there's a problem because maybe the person doesn't want your land. So we want to sort of cover ourselves from both angles. So we say, make sure the borrower has land and the lender has land. So there's two ways that the lender can have land. That's already good enough. The Chaim Kineski brings that the Beis Yosef says that the reason is because if the lender has land, then the principal can work in a different way. It doesn't work just because it's like collected, but it works because he can give his shtaris to Bezin out of the copy that he owns. It's an easy way to make a kin to Bezin. Okay, so he wants to. So Rav said, both have to have it. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Lamalva Pishin, Shein, Loiva, Loiva Pishin, Lamalva. If either one of them has land, if the Malva has it with that and the Loiva doesn't, or the Loiva has it and not the Malva, it's good enough. It's considered that they have land, you can make a principal. Okay, Ein Lekako, Achayavim Lekako. What happens if the borrower doesn't have land, but people who owe money to the borrower have land? Because supposed to be granted a principal. We had this in the previous Mishnah, where you could write a principal because of it's called Shigud Dernasin, that someone owes me land and I owe someone money. So the person who I owe money to could collect all the way. If I won't pay, he could collect back from the person who owes me the money. It can go. He could transfer his right to collect from that person also, and therefore you could write a principal also if that person has land. Rabbi B'Shem Rav says, if a person has just one little patch, one little cabbage growing in a field, he could write a principal because it's considered that he has a piece of land. It may be a very small piece of land, either because he owns the land underneath the cabbage that's there, or the cabbage is attached to the ground, so mechupa the kaka is considered kaka also. So he has one tiny bit. The tiny bit is good enough to write a principal for that. In fact, thinking, wait a second, but Tony, I should have our reason about Petropin, Alien Prozbul. We have a price that says that a person can't write a Prozbul for someone who's a Shutov, who's a partner, or an artist, he's a sharecropper, he has rights to work a land, or Apotropis, he oversees a land. These are all these kind of people, you can't write a Prozbul for them. They don't have their own land, they only have land as part of a partnership, or an Arisus, or an Apotropis. You don't write for them a Prozbul. So if a person is so the question is really from the case of Shutov. If a person is a Shutov on a piece of land, he doesn't own the whole piece of land, but he owns something. So how come you can't write a principle for him? You can write a principle even if you own the tiniest piece of land. So the Gemara answers, Amen Tamon, we say over there, in Babel, Kol Klach Uklach Shutvesu, every bit of every cabbage, every little piece of cabbage that's growing in there, so Shutvesu, each one belongs to the Shutves. I own nothing individually. The Shutves owns everything. I own nothing. But here I own one tiny piece to myself, that's good enough. So we're learning from here in Din that in order to write a principle, a person has to have individual rights to a piece of land. If he has shared rights to a piece of land, that's nothing, because then it's the shutras owns it, not the person himself, and you can't write a principle. In fact, you want this. Can you write a principle for an apotropis if the orphan that he's in charge of has land? Okay, the case of our mission was the opposite. Our case of our mission was that you wrote for Yasin because the apotropis owns it. Now, what the question is, what happens if you want to write for the apotropis because the Yasin owns land? So the Gemara says, yeah, there's really enough that you could learn from the first case in the which was Kaisin Ishan the Ishta. You could write a principle for a man if his wife owns land. So you see that person, if one person is in charge of someone else's land, then you could write a principle for the person who's in charge. Then you could write for the husband because his wife's land, his wife owns land. So too the apotropis is the one who's in charge of the orphan's land, and therefore you can write a principle for apotropis based on the yasim having land. What about if you want to write for a lady because her husband has land? Again, the opposite case of our mission. In our mission, it said you could write for a man if his wife has land. But now I want to wonder, could you write if you lent money to a lady, but she has no land, but her husband does have land, could you write a principle for her? So the one says, yes, Mishma, you know, and then I can see from the other case of mission, because the Chaim Yisrael, Nefsi Apotropin, you could write a principle to a yasim because their apotropis, their guardian, has land. So too, you could write a principle to a lady because her guardian, her husband, the one who's responsible, has land, and that's a good enough reason to write a principle. It's considered that they have land. The Gemara continues now to talk about the din of Kaveris Devarim. The Mishnah had a machlokes whether a beehive has a din of kaka for a number of dinim or not. So the Gemara says, "Revobashim Shimon Lakish says, time to Rebbeleza. The reason why Rebbeleza holds that a beehive has a din of kaka is because it says in the pasuk, "Vayavah ha'amal yar v'hine halach v'hine helech dvash." people came to the forest and there was a lot of honey there. It was flowing honey. So you see in the pasuk that it. Well, the Gemara is going to explain. So the Gemara says, "Ma chamrina, right now, how do you see from here that a beehive is considered attached to the ground?" Amar Mana, Mana says, "Chorsha, chorsha mapik dvash. That does a forest make honey?" So he says was that the limit is because it says they saw a forest and there was honey coming from it. Really should have said they came to a beehive and they saw honey coming from it. So it's here to teach you that a beehive has a status of a forest. Just like a forest is attached to the ground, so to a beehive has the din of consider the character, that's how it makes a drasha. So or else the pasuk, if not to teach you this point, then the pasuk would be picking the wrong word. So the Gemara says, and Ramana says, continues. The very next pasuk says that it's talking about Yonason. Yonason dipped his stick into the Yaroistvash, into the forest of honey. Yos, it would have been a better drasha because there it's saying that the honey, the thing that holds the honey, is a forest, and it would be it's much clearer from that pasuk the point that it, comparing the beehive to a forest, and in other words, to tell you that it's considered mechubal karka. So really, that would have been a better drasha. So Ramana explains the drasha, but he says really the better drasha would have been from the very next pasuk, which more directly connects the beehive to the forest. And Rabbi Yeshua Rabbon says b'shem Shimon Lakish. The first was Rabbi Vol saying from Shimon Lakish. Now somebody else, Rabbi Yeshua Rabbon says from Shimon Lakish, that he says Omar. He says, Shama Yasa Kane, Fayitba Usariyar Tzvash. I heard it exactly like you're saying, that Rish Lakish said his drasha from the second pasuk, from Yitba Usariyar Tzvash. In fact, that was the bright drasha. What Ramana had said, that the drasha should have been from the second pasuk, it would have made more sense. In fact, now we're saying that Rish Lakish really did say it from that second pasuk. Okay, so we have this pasuk from which we learn that's how Rabbi Yosef gets his din, that a beehive is considered attached to the ground. So the Gemara says this, Manankai, what are we talking about? What's the case with this Amachok is, whether the beehive is considered attached to the ground? The Gemara says, in the Mechuparasakaka, if it's talking about that the beehive was attached to the ground, it was attached with tar or something, it was mounted attached to the ground, then Kol Amo Moidi Sheikakaka, then everyone would agree that that's considered Mechuparasakaka. So we don't need, there wouldn't be a Machok is, or Blas and the Chacham, whether that's considered Mechuparasakaka. In the Mishulagabi, you say this, or stay, you say this on that. If the hive is up on a pole, meaning it's not on the ground at all, it's just laying suspended off the ground on a pole, call Amma Moedish and Bakaka. Then even Rabbos would be a Kankas of the Kaka. Here in Kaiman, what's the Machoikis? The Munachas of Kabikaka, that's laying on the ground. It's not attached to the ground, but it's on the ground. So Rabbos holds that in that case, that's what the Pasuk is teaching you, that in that case, it's considered to be attached to the ground. And the Chachamim are. And the Chacham said that no, it's not considered attached to the ground. And now the Gemara says this: Va'asikai, the following statement is going kai de Amar Rabbi Zeri b'shem Rabbi Yirmiyah. It's going like Rabbi Zeri b'shem Rabbi Yirmiyah. The Gemara pulled has two pshatim. What we're about to say, we're going to say the second shot, which is the following statement goes according to the Chachamim, based on the way we just explained it, which is Kosim Prusbel Amukamir Shaltanav Amukamir Shalkira. There's a brisa that says you could write a prusbel. If you remember, the Mishnah had said you can only write a prusbel if you own land. So the Bryce says you can write a prusbel on the place where a person has an oven, two different types of oven, a tanner or a kira, two different types of oven, that the person has the rights to put his oven on someone's land. He doesn't own land per se, but he has the rights to put the oven onto that place. So if he has that, he's allowed to write a prusbel based on that land. So you see from here, that it's only because he has land that he's able to write a prusbel. Other than that, the fact that it was just sitting on, the fact if the tanner would be, otherwise would not be considered to be, he would not be allowed to write it based on the tanner, that the tanner is not considered attached to the ground. It's only because he has the land of the Makaymish, the place where the tanner is, that's what gives him the rights to write a prusbel. So you see, like, this is like the Chachamim, that something on the ground is not considered to be attached to the ground. So that is to say that this understanding of the Gemara just compared it to the case of a tanner. And actually what the Gemara said even beforehand about the Yesedas and things like that is to say that the pasuk that we had beforehand, which teaches us that a beehive is considered attached to the ground, even though the pasuk is specifically talking about a beehive, it's not a drasha to tell us that beehives are considered attached to the ground. It's not a special limit about beehives. It's really to tell you that anything that's on the ground, that's immobile, it's meant to stay in that spot, is considered to be attached to the unquenchable lesser. So oven is something that stays put, and so is the beehive. It doesn't move, it just stays where it is. So that's considered attached to the unquenchable lesser. Okay, now the Gemara says like this. Rebchir ba'ad amar, af amokhem ishom near. Not only could you write a principle on if you have an oven, which is permanent, it doesn't, ovens don't move around very much, but you could even write a principle if a person gave you a right to put a candle in a certain spot. Now, candles, by its nature, it's smaller than an oven, but it's also more temporary. Candles don't necessarily stay put. Even so, that's considered that you have land, and that's good enough to write a principle. Okay. So that's back to principle. Now they're going to have the following question. Excuse me. After Paz came, what about, would Rabbi Elazar and the Chum have an argument about whether for bread? What the Gemara means is like this. The last thing Rabbi Elazar said, it was that if you take out the honeycombs out of the hive, that's considered to be taking something off the ground on Shabbos. It's like harvesting something from the ground on Shabbos. Why? Because since the hive is considered to be the ground or attached to the ground, then taking the honeycombs out of the hive is considered unattaching something from the place where it grew, and you're over on Shabbos, we've taken that out. So the Gemara says, well, what happens if you have an oven that's also on the ground? As we had just mentioned, that an oven on the ground, according to Rabbi, is considered attached to the ground. And someone had put bread into the oven, and the way they used to do in those days was the bread would be stuck onto the walls of the oven. When it was ready, you peel that bread off. And that's not considered a malacha. Inherently, it's not a malacha to take it off. But since the oven is on the ground, maybe we should say that according to Blesser, it should be usher to take it off because the bread baked over in that spot. So just like the honey developed in the hive, it's considered to be harvesting when you pull it up, you're taking something off the ground. So here too also, the bread became baked when it was on in this oven. So it took on the stat, it's not, it's as if it's attached to the ground. It says, so to speak, like it grew there. So should we say that according to Rabbi Elazar, it's not considered to be like you're harvesting something from the ground, and it would be a malacha on Shabbos? The one says, no, it's not true. Devash, geduli kaders, honey is considered to grow from the hive, because the honey, you have an empty hive, and the honey sort of, so to speak, magically comes there. The bees are bringing liquids there, and they're developing into honey, and sort of like coming, so to speak, by itself. So it's considered to have grown from the hive. But pas inu gedula karka, the bread doesn't grow in the oven. Someone takes dough and sticks it onto there, so the fact that the bread becomes baked there doesn't make a difference, and it's not considered to be that it grew in any way in the oven. Okay, now back to the Mishnah. It said it was Hamachzer. The Mishnah had talked about a person who wants to pay back a debt on Shvius. You're not allowed to take it. You have to say you have to say to the person you don't shvi that I'm not allowed to collect it. So the Gemara says Hamachzer b'Shvius for Amalei Mishamanani. And he says, it's Shemitah, I can't collect it. Rav Huna says, if he wants to, he could do it b'safa rafa. He could say it in a low voice, meaning not with a lot of confidence. He could say, is it a Shemitah, I'm not supposed to give back to you. I mean, shoot to the cow, but at the same time, sticking his hand out to take it. In other words, the person doesn't have to make a strong rejection of the loan. When the guy says, I want to pay you back, he doesn't have to say, listen, no way, I won't take your money no matter what. Make a big stink about not returning it. Well, he has to just say, I don't want to take it because it's Shemitah, but if he can leave his hand out, as if to say, if you want to give it to me, I'll still take it. Okay, and in the Mishnah it said was that a murderer also is, if the people in the city want to give him honor, then he has to tell those people, do you know that I'm a murderer? So the Gemara says like this, from this we say the following, Banash, Tony Chodin Mechlo, a person who learned one mesechta, michla over here comes from the word from like mechilta. I learned one mesechta. Vehu azulaser, he comes to a city. Ve'inur mikrulei begin tarte, and they honor him as if he knows two mesechtas. Charch meimalang has to tell him, anochad the michla, anochakam. I'm only smart enough to know one mesechta, not to know two mesechtas. So, and that comes from our Mishnah that it's an understanding of the Mishnah that the Mishnah had said that the Ritzeach has to tell the people that he was a murderer, and that's why he's in the Yom Mikla. So we might have thought it was just Xeris Akasiv, but the Gemara's understanding, Rabbi's understanding that the reason for that Xeris Akasiv is it's a sense, a certain honesty that the person has to have and tell them, you shouldn't be honoring me because you may not realize that I'm here because I'm a Ritzeach, and so therefore I'm not such a upstanding citizen, and you might not want to honor me, and therefore in other situations where a person be honored because he's a Talmud Chacham, because he knows a lot, he has to tell them that, in fact, I don't really know as much as you think I do, and therefore you should not be honoring me for that.